Previously on the Baker's Dozen podcast. Captivating right off the bat. There's a great cast, beautiful setting, simple plot, and it transcends from a classic whodunit crime mystery into a really complex story.
Some movies are meant to be enjoyed in the theater. I knew it when I was watching Sicario in theaters last fall. Denis Villeneuve is clearly a director who makes movies you absolutely must see in the theater.
Army national champion?
Kind of like in the USC pick earlier.
Yeah, dude!
All right, I gotta admit it. Recent weeks in the podcast, we've gone pretty heavy on the sports talk, haven't we?
So you're not good at sports. It's a very small part of life.
Sports. March, Bart rides up in the front seat today because he's a good guy at sports.
But with the upcoming NFL and college football seasons ready to kick off, plus fantasy football kicking into high octane, it seemed too good an idea not to dive in headfirst and enhance our coverage of sports as much as possible.
Enhance. Just print the damn thing!
Not to mention we've had plenty of mega fights in UFC and boxing, and there's still more to discuss. So yeah, it's been pretty sports-centric here on the Baker's Dozen podcast, where we hope for a better blend between sports and pop culture when possible. But today's Labor Day, and despite fallout from Alabama FSU, Virginia Tech West Virginia, and even week one of the NFL staring us straight in the face, today is a movie day for many, especially those prepping themselves, or the little ones, to go back to school.
No, I am not going to the mall. Keep spelling, mister.
Which is why a noted fan of the show, who I think will soon be a fan favorite guest, he's waiting in the wings, and he's ready to record today. And that man is none other than Steve Armstrong, aka Army. And he's gonna slide right in as our go-to guy for everything movies. Which means our first episode of Basic Movie Training, it's ready to go. We're ready to record. Which means there's no time like the present, today, to enjoy one or maybe all of the three movie recommendations Army has for you. Right after you finish listening to this episode, of course.
Yesterday, you said tomorrow. So just do it! Make your dreams come true! Just do it!
And while Jack Hatch and yours truly can more than cover you on the TV front, it's only fair that I got a real expert on this show as our full-time movie expert.
Take that, you freaky piece of shit! You don't mow another guy's lawn!
My name is River City Clement, and welcome to a special pop-up episode, our seventh this summer, right here at the Baker's Dozen Podcast. Remember that you can hear all of our previous pop-up episodes from this summer, including my top 25 movies of the 21st century, alongside last month's sports-heavy content by subscribing to our show, The Baker's Dozen Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. Whether it's on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, or streaming at our Podomatic.com page, check the info. You can find us all over social media and stream us wherever you want. Doesn't matter the platform or the device, we got you covered. So without further delay, let's fire up the phone lines as Steve Armstrong, aka Army, joins the show for his first appearance. Some basic movie training with yours truly, River City Clement, right here on the Baker's Dozen Podcast.
Just a minute! Don't hang up!
Hello. You'll have to speak up. I'm wearing a towel.
First time guest, same old phone line issues. Let's just get Army in the studio, aka the friendly confines of the Clement kitchen, spoiler alert, and get this episode started once and for all.
You know, the bank loan, just enough to keep your mama poor. Thought they could swipe her land.
It's a big bank.
It's too big.
That's what she said.
Now they can foreclose on Friday. So come hell or high water,
get the money to the bank on Thursday.
And then you are free and clear.
Little brother,
go get that money.
When you listen to the Baker's Dozen podcast, it is sports and pop culture. But we have got to step up our movie game, which is why we need to give you a little basic movie training. And Army, Steve Armstrong, he's in the studio for the first time. He's ready to record. He's ready to give you three movies that you absolutely have to check out. Army, what's going on, my man?
What's up, everybody?
I know he's excited. I know he's ready. And we're just going to jump right into it. The first movie that Army wants to talk about is 2016's Hell or High Water. This came out about a year ago, and it absolutely blew up. IMDb, 7.6. Rotten Tomatoes, listen to this score, 97%. That is certified fresh. Metacritic, that's tough, 88%. This is one of the big movies of 2016, four Oscar nominations. Army, tell us why people need to check out Hell or High Water.
This movie, I feel like, slid under the radar for a lot of people. Like, me and my girlfriend had heard about it, heard the buzz, and we're like, all right, we'll check it out. It's got a Western feel to it. It's like two brothers in West Texas, some little no-name podunk town, that they're robbing banks to save their parents' farm. The great part is like they're doing it from the bank that's trying to actually take their property. You got Ben Foster as one of the brothers. You got Chris Pine as the other. And the writing of this is, like, I think the reason it's fantastic. It's the writer of Sicario and the movie we just saw, Wind River.
Taylor Sheridan. This guy's a star.
And for TV fans, he's Chief David Hale on Sons of Anarchy, if you didn't know that.
I did not know that. You know, the director, David McKenzie, a little unknown, but doesn't it seem like the new outlaw, especially in Sheridan's world, is a really poor, screwed over by the system, left to be forgot? We've got people who are sort of fighting a system that's forgotten them, and that's a theme that I think is really popular in pop culture today.
Oh, and I think his heroes are the kind of anti-heroes. They're not your normal, like, with a shield or superpowers. They're realistic people that I think everyone can relate to. Like, Ben Foster's character is fresh out of prison for, I think, assault or something like that. And he's doing it to help his brother.
Chris Pine from a broken family, you know, not connected with his ex-wife. They don't really have anything going on. His
has
mom
two kids.
Dies.
And Ben Foster's got nothing. I think the dad was never in the picture. So the mom was the last thing connecting them to. You could tell Sheridan is a big fan of, like, just some of the same actors. I think his name is Gil
Birmingham.
Birmingham.
Which
that's
a lot of people
is.
Will recognize. He's on The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Yes.
He sort of plays that sort of stoic Indian, and he sort of got that native feel to the movie, and he plays off really well on the other big name, Jeff Bridges,
which I haven't mentioned yet, and he is, them two together are fantastic. The shit talking between those two is great. There's a whole bunch of Native American and Mexican jokes between the two, and you tell it's all good fun. The ribbon, they're either in a hotel or a truck the whole time, so it's just nothing but them that you could tell they've been partners for a long time, and it's written beautifully, and Gil's also in Wind River, so you could tell he's been in two of the three that Sheridan has written. And go back to the director, I looked up his stuff on IMDb. I've heard of one of them, but I've never seen any other movie, and I feel like this is his tour de force, first one out, everyone needs to see. It's pretty fantastic to go from, like, no name to pumping out this that was getting all the Oscar buzz.
Oh, that was the great thing about it. And one of the things that I loved is that you've got this sort of brother blood connection between Chris Pine and Ben Foster, and they're different guys, but they sort of work together in different ways. And then you've got this relationship between Alberto and between Jeff Bridges' character, and that's sort of that, I don't really want to be your partner, I give you a hard time, but I couldn't do this job without you. And there's some real emotion, and let's be honest, there's some real violence in this movie. This movie goes to some dark places. If you've seen Sicario, if you see Wind River, there are moments that just grab you, almost with that Coen Brothers No Country for Old Men, but instead of it sort of being surrounded by this mystique, it's just sort of, this is happening, people are dying, and you have to deal with it.
When it kind of comes, like, out of nowhere almost, because you get so enthralled in the story itself for the first hour or so, and then that's when the action and violence picks up. You're so invested in all these characters, and all of a sudden the violence hits and you're just like, oh wow. Like, so it kicks in once you're already in, like, you believe all these characters and you're actually, like, picked aside almost.
West Texas is a character in this story. You know, the setting itself is so important to understanding the plight of these guys. You know, some of the shootout scenes, the sniper scene that we see on that sort of rocky bluff, it grabs you. It's pulse pounding, and the music is very subtle, but it really captures your emotions. And I think at times you're kind of like, who the hell am I rooting for? I don't know which side to pick.
Yeah, when it's almost like there's a deeper meaning that gets brought up a couple times after they rob one of the banks. One of the guys in the diner makes a comment of like, yeah, I saw these two dudes rob a bank, the bank that's been stealing from me for 30 years. And I think there's another couple comments later on in the movie, but it's almost the deeper meaning of just how some of these banks and Wall Street are keeping these people poor, and they're robbing from the people that are, like, bringing in the money. So, I mean, that's kind of, it's not like heavily thrown at you or something, but it's just kind of like an undertone in the movie, I think.
Well, speaking of undertone, there are two incredible separate scenes with two different waitresses. They could not be any more different. You've got the ageless Margaret Bowman, who's been in a few of Taylor Sheridan's movies, and she's got this great scene with this restaurant that just makes one thing.
One thing.
You get T-bone steaks. You know, what don't you want?
What don't you want?
It's just this unbelievable scene that brings a lot of brevity to a pretty serious movie, and then pretty heartbreaking scene with Katie Mixon. Some of you will recognize her from Eastbound and Down. She's sort of the down-on-her-luck waitress who is sort of torn between, well, these guys were actually nice to me. They kind of humanized me, but then they robbed this bank. People could have died. There are lives to be lost in this movie, and it's hard not to pick sides. It's hard not to think, is everybody right? Is everybody wrong? It's one of those movies that kind of tells you, you have to make your mind up on your own, and I really respect that. That's good writing.
Yeah, it is. And I feel like the way that they're doing it, too, I think is more realistic than some of these going in with M16, some of these like unrealistic like bank robberies. They get it like a cheap little car, and like the way they get rid of the evidence and stuff, like they're seriously covering their tracks to get away with this.
It's almost like we're doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Just a little bit of prison expertise thrown in.
Well, and they're stealing the bank's money. They're making a point to not do everyone else's money. So I think that's a big thing. It's a realistic, gritty, just dirty movie that like I feel like it gets you from the word go.
We're going to talk realistic and gritty. Army recommended an unbelievable movie from 2012 that we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk about a movie called End of Watch, and we're going to keep with that dark and gritty theme. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Baker's Dozen podcast with River City Clement. What is it you want to do when you grow up?
I am police officer 2, Brian Taylor. This is my partner, Officer Zavala.
I'm in my chonies.
I know, dude. Come on, come on.
I'm in my chonies. No.
Come on, man.
We were basic patrol here in Newton, one of the toughest divisions in the LAPD.
Take pride in what you do, you guys.
Yes, sir.
I got him. Try to run.
Pit him, man.
Pit him.
You know, I see you guys out here being good little company, man. It's all fun and games. You get to run and jump and fight and shoot.
I'm down with that.
Watch six.
Let's continue with that basic movie training. We're going to talk 2012. We're going to talk a film that I did not see until a few weeks ago, End of Watch. IMDb, look at this number, 7.7. Rotten Tomatoes, 85%. Metacritic, it's tough, 68%. End of Watch is a movie that you were excited that I hadn't seen, and I was texting you throughout watching it because I was so into it, and Heather was just entranced by it. By the end, she was bawling at how emotionally gripping this movie was. Why do people need to check out 2012? Thrilling End of Watch.
This movie, it's written and directed by David Ayer, who I guess most recently people may think of Suicide Squad.
Please think of Fury, which is one of the most underrated World War II movies in the last millennium.
It's done some really underrated, really great ones too, like Street Kings with Keanu Reeves.
Maybe my favorite Keanu Reeves movie.
Yeah, Harsh Times with Christian Bale. And then he wrote the screenplay for Fast and the Furious and Training Day.
U-571, SWAT, which I actually liked with Colin Farrell and Jeremy Renner.
So if you take Suicide Squad off his resume, like
the studio's fault.
It's stellar. But this is just a dark and gritty, similar to Hell or High Water. It's very realistic story of two partners in LA, South Central, like one of the dirtiest, busiest, toughest parts of the country, basically. And you got Jake Gyllenhaal as Mike Taylor, and you got Michael Pena as the other partner, who's Mike Zavala. And they clearly you can tell that they've been partners for a while. They're partners and best friends. But I think one of the reasons this movie is so good is how it's filmed. You go from the standard action scenes of like the angles and everything, you'll see, but then they also have cameras on their chests and they'll put them on the guns. It's so really it goes cool, from realistic.
It's a cool built-in story. Gyllenhaal as a cop is also like in a college sort of adjunct course, and like he's filming this.
So class
it's kind
or something.
Of like this like pirate filming. It's that Paul Greengrass handheld camera that can get shaky at times, but it's like the first person first shooter perspective.
Yeah, and even the first like 5-10 minutes of the movie, there's a police chase that it almost looks like they just pulled it from an episode of Cops.
Yeah, it's almost like Lenny with Grand Theft Auto.
It looks so real. It kind of amazing they actually did that on their own, because it's nothing but the angle of the cop or the car in the front and then the action scene afterwards. And
these aren't dirty cops. These are cops that are aggressive. They're cocky, but they want to make a difference and they want people to know that we're in charge. There are also a lot of scenes in which they're working with the people around them, and they seem to have the respect of many, even criminals around the area.
I feel like cops in this area are drastically different than like your normal everyday cops, because these people, they say in the movie, they pull out their guns maybe two or three times a shift, and which is probably more than a lot of these cops doing an entire career.
Yes.
Because, I mean, there's a black street gang. I don't know if it's the Bloods or the Crips that's represented in the movie. And then there's one Mexican street gang. It's called the Curbside.
Which is like a very violent take on the Latin Kings, as if they weren't violent enough.
Was it MS-13?
Yes.
It's like kind of like take on that.
And women in these gangs, and they don't come off as parodies. A lot of these are actually former gang members, believe it or not. It's amazing that Hollywood has reached out to this sort of, you've left this culture, but you have so much to teach us about it.
Similar situation with one of the gang members. Like, he's just filming for the heck of it.
Criminal's perspective.
Yeah, so, like, they're riding in a car to go to a drive-by or something, and they're just, like, you see him, like, getting prepared and shooting the shit. Before then, it's almost the exact opposite of Gyllenhaal filming him. In this movie, Gyllenhaal and Peña stumble across some dealings with, they come across some, like, murders and some houses.
Cartel.
Yeah, it's one of the, it's a make-believe cartel, but it's one of the big ones, supposedly, in Mexico. And, yeah, they stumble across a couple houses, and then all of a sudden, like, they're out for him. The gangs are out for him. And that's kind of where the shit kicks off towards, like, the end of the movie.
I mean, they're cops being hunted down, and it's known on the streets. One of my favorite scenes early in the movie is Michael Peña shows up, and they're sort of what you think, that sort of stereotypical thug gangster. They basically drop their weapons, get into a fist fight, and by the end of it, Peña wins, arrest the guy, and all of a sudden, that guy is sort of like, hey, that cop was cool, you know, he gave me a chance, he didn't use excessive force on me and said when I asked for it. And it's just one of those cool scenes where, I think when I saw the trailer, I thought, well, these are just cocky cops going around harassing people. No, they're taking a similar attitude to the people that they're going after. Not backing down, using force when necessary, but also, they seem to have an intimate knowledge of what they're dealing with.
When you can tell they've been in this neighborhood for a while, like that gang member ended up helping them out later in
the
movie.
That's a great scene.
Yeah, and like, one of the my favorite things in this movie is the relationships. You believe every relationship, I feel like, from, obviously, Michael Peña and Jake Gyllenhaal, like that partnership, best friend, family events they'll go to, or this, them just being in the cop car.
It's a bond only those cops could know, the people that risk their lives, almost like soldiers out, you know, in a war. We don't know it because we haven't lived it.
But it's not only that. Anna Kendrick plays Jake Gyllenhaal's girlfriend.
A great 12 minutes in the movie.
Yeah, hardly in like screen time. There's very little, but you believe just how they did those few scenes. You believe that they're in love. Like, that's a perfect, like, well-off relationship. And it's the same with Michael Peña and his wife.
They almost model the relationship that a cop and his wife have to have to Gyllenhaal and Kendrick. I like that balance.
Yeah, they're like long-term police, like, couple. Like, they've been together for, I don't know, since high school. So, like, 15 years or something like that.
Great stories with that, too.
Oh, my God.
So many moments of, again, I said it before with Hell or High Water, there's these moments where you forget that these are cops dealing with gangsters, with drug dealers, with homicide.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just guys hanging out and sort of forgetting all of that and shooting the shit with each other, you know, busting each other's balls a little bit.
Well, and they've got great women in this movie, too. And not only the ones I just mentioned, but the other two female cops. One's America Ferrera.
Yeah, she was phenomenal. I love her in Superstore. She got famous on Ugly Betty, but she was great in sort of this.
She's a hard ass.
Yeah, and she's got this great level of sarcasm where she can shoot the shit with the guys.
Yeah.
And she can take it as well as she gives it.
I mean, one of the like most grim, like ugliest moments in the movie, when one of the other cops gets in that fight with the big Hispanic guy.
You've got David Harbour, which many of you will know is sort of the lead cop in Stranger Things.
Yes.
Sort of this disjointed from the cop. He's disillusioned. He's been screwed over by the system. He's trying to tell people what the story is. And he's got this Asian rookie who can't
handle
straight.
It. Yeah. And like the second after this scene happens, like the two, America Ferrera and her partner, are literally just like, you know, she wouldn't have lasted. They wouldn't have had. And like, even like her sergeants like.
Had a spinoff movie with those two girls.
He's like, you're cold, man. I can't handle it. It's like. They're great. There's a lot of those actors of like, I don't know his name, but I've seen him in a bunch of things. There's a lot of those.
Well,
yeah. It's one of my favorite movies that I feel like people haven't seen. Like, I'll bring it up, be like, oh yeah, I've heard of it. Not many people, I feel like, have seen that movie.
The trailer fooled me. I thought it was going to be campy. I thought it was going to be over the top violence, and it was just so well done. And I got to tell you, the ending, we're not going to give anything away.
Oh.
It rips your guts out, and then it sort of has this moment in which, like, everything sort of comes together perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I've seen a better ending to this type of movie. The last 20 minutes grab you by the chest and then sort of let go slowly. It was unbelievable. Heather was blown away by the last 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah. You're sitting on the edge of your seat because, I mean, it kind of reminded me of that scene in True Detective, that long tracking scene because
it was so pulse pounding.
These guys are cutting through neighborhoods and alleys and houses. It's a long, like, 10-15 minute scene, and that, it just reminded me of that, and it, like, you literally don't know what could happen. The great camera work, and it came out in 2012, and so, I mean, it's one of my favorite movies of the last 5, 6, 7 years.
It blew me away, and David Ayer's a star. He's got an upcoming Netflix film with Will Smith. And Noomi Rapace, the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, mm-hmm. Some of you remember from Prometheus. It's going to be a big budget Netflix film, and it's supernatural. It's different, and I think Ayer, if he was given the chance to make the Suicide Squad film that he wanted to make, would have been much better. There were parts of Suicide Squad that worked and parts that were just a mess. But I gotta say, if you've had a good enough shot with Ayer with Fury, which I was just blown away by. I mean, come on, the guy got Shia LaBeouf to look great.
Yeah, which is not an easy act to do.
I mean, if you can get LaBeouf LaBeouf. If you can get him to sort of grab the screen, Ayer's a star. Well, we've talked about two gritty, dark movies with a big message. We're going to go a little light, and we're going to go to one of the most eccentric directors in Hollywood, a guy that Army's a fan of, and a guy that you all need to start checking out. We're going to talk about Shane Black's The Nice Guys right after our last break.
Now more with River City Clement on the Baker's Dozen podcast.
You beat people up and charge money?
Yeah. Sad, isn't it?
How much would you charge to beat up my friend Janet?
What?
How much you got?
$20?
That's good. This conversation is over.
The mob is trying to spread its operation to Los Angeles. Somehow, my daughter Amelia is involved. Please, find her.
You seen this girl?
What's in it for me?
Oh, we can do this the easy way. No! We're currently doing it the easy way.
Whatever happened to offering me $20?
It's the recession.
Last but not least, for some basic movie training, you know, this one is one that I avoided again, and Army got me to watch it, and I liked it. I didn't love it, but that's a good thing, because if we all like the same movies, nothing would be worth watching. You know, you got to have a little bit of diversity, and that's The Nice Guys, which came out in 2016. IMDb solid, 7.4. Rotten Tomatoes, great, 92%. Metacritic solid, 70%. A lot of the reviews are like, I really, really liked it, but, and I was kind of in that camp, but why should people check out The Nice Guys?
Shane Black, I feel like, is the reason you check this out. He did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, another great movie that I feel like slips under the radar. The way he writes everything he does, it's very, he's got his own style of comedy and action. He can write characters extremely well. I've never been a huge fan of Ryan Gosling, but he is great in this movie. It's Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe in 1970s LA.
It is very 1970s LA.
Oh,
too.
Extremely.
It slides comfortably into that.
Ryan Gosling's a sleazy private eye detective. Russell Crowe is like one of those guys that he's not in the yellow pages, but you call him to get things done. Like if your 16-year-old daughter's dating a 25-year-old sleazebag, you call him and he'll beat his ass. Like that kind of like just get stuff done. But Gosling is his facial, like his demeanor, his like the way he screams and laughs. He's a drunk throughout the movie. I feel like he steals the show. And then Russell Crowe is like that just bounces off of Gosling extremely well.
It's in this movie. Russell Crowe has an ability to be very, very likable when he's not playing Maximus, when he's not, you know, in The Insider. Russell Crowe is a guy that you kind of just laugh with and you want to have a beer with. And he's great in this movie.
Yeah, he's a hard ass. He's not like Maximus in Gladiator, but he is a hard ass. He's still like he can kick the ass of anyone he comes across in this movie. I definitely think so.
And Gosling, this is not Crazy Stupid Love, Gosling. One of the worst movies I've ever seen. I'm sorry. I was so stupid. This is like Gosling in Drive or The Big Short. He brings it. He really won me over. You know, he doesn't. I mean, Ryan Gosling's a good looking guy. I'll say it. But like, you don't watch this movie and think like he couldn't do this. This isn't Ryan Gosling. He kind of slips into that weaselly, wimpy part pretty well. And Russell Crowe beating the crap out of people. I can buy that. I think that's a big dude.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he beats the crap out of Ryan Gosling in the first like 30 minutes. He makes you believe him real quick. And Gosling's got a daughter. She's like 12, 13 or something. She steals the show in a lot of her scenes. Like I was a big fan of her.
It could have fallen apart, but it worked to have your daughter come along with things. Not as like a stop or my mom will shoot type parody type thing, you know. More of a, she's sort of weaseling her way into things, but she can see things that her dad can't. And, you know, crazy enough, they sort of have a tragic thing that brings them together with the loss of her mother and his wife, you know, and that's brought up a few times, but she was great. So was Margaret Qualley. She sort of plays this sort of enigma. She was in The Leftover. She's kind of this girl they're searching for throughout the movie. She's got a few isolated scenes, but she fits the role pretty well. This is another really well-casted movie. I mean, Shane Black is known for getting Robert Downey Jr.'s career back on track, for getting the last great Val Kilmer performance with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. He was given Iron Man 3, but I think this is his type of movie. It's got to be his original story with his quirks and his love for the setting. I've always heard that Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, the setting is really important. We've seen that in our first two movies, and that's certainly 1970s LA, everything that you think, it's personified so well with The Nice Guys, with sort of the sleazy PIs, but also the porn industry gets into it, sort of this weird connection with the Detroit auto industry when it's at its best, its peak, but also sort of that Japanese invasion starting to happen. It's very interesting to see.
It is, and I think it's one of the most original movies I'd seen in a while, and I think that may have been one of the reasons it slipped under the radar last year, because it was nothing but comic book movies and like sequels last year, and this was like the one original. I think it came out in the summer, like May or June or something like that, which is kind of ballsy. Like an original movie that no one's ever heard of to come out there. And obviously, I mean, you saw the critic scores. It did really well. Money-wise, I'm not so sure it did that well, but for a sequel.
It's got a little cult. It's got a little cult following. People ride hard for this movie.
Yeah, and you've also got Kim Basinger.
Yeah, in this movie, nice role.
She's like the not the DA, but like head of the Justice Department kind of role. And she plays a big part for the character that you mentioned earlier, who played by Margaret Qualley. And she, like, it's her mother. And so you have that. You have Keith David in this movie, who
always
plays
nice
in.
To see him.
Love me some Keith David. He's in there as kind of someone who's sort of related to Russell Crowe. He kind of shows up in random parts of the movie. It's definitely a Shane Black kind of thing, but just some of the things when like Ryan Gosling falls asleep, and it almost seems like an acid trip kind of thing in a car.
Got
like a
Bumblebee in the back.
Yeah, and like Russell Crowe is talking to him, and it comes into play, but he actually dreamed, he thought he had an ankle gun, and then so he tries to grab it later, but he actually dreamed that moment, and he's like freaking out about that. Like, it's... Anytime you can put 70s LA porn, politics, and
it's ass-kicking.
and great dialogue between a lot of these characters. I'm a big fan of.
But it's the dialogue that I think wins people over. Gosling and Crowe work well together. And it's no surprise. Shane Black cut his teeth in Hollywood writing every Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
And can you think of a better cop, buddy, sarcastic, and yet, you know, has its moments of action?
Yeah.
I wasn't a big fan of Last Action Hero, but I love The Last Boy Scout with Bruce Willis and Damon Wayans. He wrote that.
Yeah.
The guy obviously did his work, and now he's trying to put his vision onto the screen behind the director.
When you name all of those, and what do they all have in common? It's kind of like these great duos, mm-hmm. and buddy cops. Like, you can, I would watch.
That's a theme for this episode, by the way. Duos.
It really
is. Army loves a good duo.
For what, I didn't even pick up on that until just now. But for whatever reason, like, I would watch Russell Crowe and Gosling in this movie just go shopping, because someone's either going to get hurt, or it's going to be hilarious, or something's definitely going to happen. Like, they are great together, I think, in this movie.
Three movies that you absolutely need to check out. And I know you've heard of them. Everybody heard of Hell or High Water once last year,
mm-hmm.
whether it was for the big Academy Award buzz. With four nominations, you've got Jeff Bridges, you've got Ben Foster, you've got Chris Pine, who's just becoming bigger and bigger. Not Chris Pratt, Chris Pine.
You got Jeff Bridges giving his Rooster Cogburn sequel in there.
That's his go-to, isn't it? He's got to have that slow Southern drawl that's just as deep as it can get.
And it's still great.
Then you have End of Watch, which is, you know, if you're not a Jake Gyllenhaal fan, I think you will be by the end of it. Michael Pena, many people know from Traffic. He's always good. Michael Pena is always good. And then Shane Black, just an original vision. And it's nice that it sounds, you know, kind of cliched, but Shane Black makes Shane Black movies. And that's to do. No more Iron Man 3s. I want to see a Shane Black movie. And I got to say, I hope somewhere down the line that Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling, if they don't get to reprise these characters, I want to see these two on screen together, because they got something. There's a spark between them.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that these three movies have in common is great writing and great directors, which doesn't always bring in everyone, doesn't have all the big explosions or Captain America throwing a shield across the field, something like that. But like, they all pull you in with the dialogue. You believe these characters are real, and like, you want to see where this story ends, kind of thing. And those, the kinds of stories always pull me in.
Once the winter season hits, we're going to have you back in the studio. Three new movies. We'll see if another thing comes with those duos. Maybe we'll go for the lone story. Who knows? But Army, thanks for giving us some basic movie training and getting people three recommendations that they absolutely have to check out.
Absolutely. Looking forward to the winter, brother.
I really hope you enjoyed today's episode, our first of many appearances with Army for more basic movie training. I'm ecstatic we finally got him in the studio and can already tell he's a natural on the mic. We'll have to get him back in real soon once the fall movie calendar kicks into high gear for more recommendations.
So am I to understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
That's the fact, Jack!
Because you know the newest outside linebacker on Crucial Taunt, the man we're soon going to call the Crab Man, he's got plenty for you to recommend, whether on the silver screen or your home screen. Trust me.
Here come the crabs.
Guess who the crabs? Your pukes will grab. We wink on bed sheets and toilet seats. Then pinch your nuts. We've got feet. The crabs. Oh, yes.
As it's gone all summer, as we transition into the fall with these pop-up episodes, we'll be back in the studio, well, when we're back in the studio. It's been a pretty busy calendar, but going back to work, look, things sometimes get crazy, and you just don't know when the next podcast is going to come up. But I'm sure that's okay with you, right? Right? Right?
Rabbit.
Say Car Ramrod.
I got a Plymouth Voyager.
Say Car Ramrod.
Vermont plates. Hold on.
You didn't say it.
Oh, I forgot.
I wrote it on the paper.
Oh, well. Either way, be sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts so you can catch up with our entire archive of pop-up episodes this past summer, including our fantasy football and college football preview episodes, and plenty of pop culture that snuck in along the way. But for now, I gotta get ready to get back to work. It's the first day of school and all tomorrow. And who could have a problem with that? Nobody. That's who. This the finale. My pep talk turned into a pep rally. Don't get involved, listen what the crystal ball say. Halle Berry, hallelujah. Holla back, I'll do ya. Beast. I love bad, 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 my bro. And yeah, I like the f***, I got bro. I love bad, 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 my bro. And yeah, I like the f***, I got bro. You know, I've been working here for 44 years. Ain't nobody ever ordered nothing but T-bone steak and a baked potato. Except this one asshole from New York tried to order trout back in 1987. We don't sell no goddamn trout. T-bone steaks. So either you don't want the corn on the cob, or you don't want the green beans. So what don't you want?